Welcome to Leveraging the Laboratory, a Mayo Clinic Laboratories podcast for administrators, outreach managers, and laboratory professionals to learn how best to leverage and optimize their laboratory for patients, clients, and staff. I'm your host, Jane Hermanson, outreach manager at Mayo Clinic Laboratories. And joining me today are my two favorite guests, Ellen Dyke-Mendelkis and Breanne Newton, Mayo Clinic Laboratories outreach solution strategists. The focus of today's discussion is centered around professionalism and advocating for our profession and for our laboratory outreach programs. With National Medical Laboratory Professionals Week occurring annually in April, this is truly our moment to shine. When we hear the term advocacy, I'll put it in little quotes, it evokes certain images, right? The dictionary definition of advocacy is any action that speaks in favor of, recommends, argues for a case, supports or defends, or pleads on behalf of others. So if we're going to advocate for our profession, we're going to be speaking in favor of, recommending, arguing about it, supporting, defending, and pleading on behalf of others regarding our profession. So today we're going to talk with the outreach team, and we're going to share our thoughts on advocating for the lab and the outreach program. So we're going to start with the concept of advocating for our profession. It's not just a job, it's a calling. Truly, it is. And with being in the throes of a national staffing shortage across the laboratory industry, truly overall, Breanne and Ellen, you both have experience being educators in medical lab science programs. Those students had to come from somewhere. What advice do you have for our listeners to be an advocate and to promote our profession? Breanne, we'll start with you. Please go first.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So first, there was a period of shameless recruiting. Won't lie. Initially, our program was built on numbers. And so I was very intentional about reaching out to those who had already declared a science major and trying to get the foundation of the program built. After that, it really did turn then into an advocacy and sharing the passion that I had for our chosen field that we've all decided to fall in love with. And that was through a series of opportunities. And it was being able to go into the biology classes, the anatomy and physiology classes, whether that be in the college setting or whether that be actually in high school, and just share with them. And the reason for that is I didn't find out about lab science until later on into my college pathway. And so I wanted to just share awareness and to bring that out and bring that forward to say, hey, if you've already decided maybe that you kind of like this, then there's a whole world that I can share more about with you. And actually brought in several students that way because they were made aware of what was out and available a lot sooner.
So you took your show on the road, shameless recruiting that way.
I did.
Ellen, what about you? How did you make sure that you had people in seats in your classrooms?
I think like Breanne and like so many labs, everybody's trying to do it all themselves, right? We meet with guidance counselors. We participate in STEM curriculums. We do it when we go to a family events. We give kids more than a stethoscope. We have them feel veins. We have them do everything we can to turn them on to lab science. But, you know, through our professional organization, ASCP.org, they have a whole advocate toolkit that will help people be successful. And then, you know, if there's no data, it didn't happen. And so they are collecting data and they're looking for advocates, Jane. So I think, and rather than everybody doing it one-off and doing it by themselves, check out ASCP.org. They really do have a lot of tools to help people be an advocate for the profession. And it might help give support to people that are trying to do it themselves.
Wow. Okay. So Ellen, I know that you have kind of an interesting story about how you ended up choosing laboratory science as your profession. Do you want to tell that story?
Oh my gosh. I did not choose the profession. The profession chose me. So it's a funny story. I had always loved sciences. And so I went to a job fair and I thought I wanted to be a physical therapist. And so I went to a job fair at my local university and I went to the booth and said, do you have a PT program? And they said, no, we don't have PT. We have MT and it's sort of the same thing. MT and PT are totally different, but other than the initials,
it's just one letter.
Pretty similar.
It's just one letter.
Just one letter. So I Googled, well, they didn't have Google at the time. So I opened up this massive curriculum book and I said, you know what? I think that's exactly what I want to do. And I came and I did the shadowing and I applied and I got into the program. And the program at that time only took 16 students into their program junior year. And I was one of 16. And I wrote in my high school yearbook my accolade to be a successful medical technologist. And I've been in the field 40 years, 40, I'm only 29, but 40 years. And I've been able to grow within the profession. And so when I tell my story to promote the profession, you really can grow within the profession. And you used to have to wait till somebody, I hate to say it, died or passed on, but now emerging leaders, there's such an opportunity because the baby boomers are leaving the profession and there is an opportunity to grow. Anyway, that's how I got in the profession.
Okay, well, we're better for it. Brianne, how about you? You said that you didn't start your career knowing you were going to be a laboratory scientist. Tell me more.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. So way back when, ninth grade, my science teacher, taking biology at the time, brought microscopes and pond water for us all to look at. Fell in love. And just all the little critters swimming around under there. And it just opened up this world of, oh my gosh, this is so cool. This is so fun. So that got me on the biology path. And from then on, it was what I wanted to do. And so the further then into college, biology, I learned at that point, unfortunately, once the checks were written, was somewhat restrictive to what I wanted to do. It was either going to require a very narrow scope of what I would be able to do with it, or much, much more school than I had originally planned. And so during my junior year in college, taking a microbiology course at that time, then we started working with bugs and E. coli and Staph aureus and all these fun ones. And something clicked at that point to where it was, oh, I can still do what I think is a lot of fun, which is a lot of scope work and all of this, but I'm looking right now at something that could make someone very, very sick. And it was me that found it. And wouldn't that be cool if there was a job that could do that? You know, it's kind of how that thought process goes. And so through career counseling and such, was able to craft that into, I think, what's commonly like a 4+1 path. And so that got me into lab science. And it, I didn't write it in my high school yearbook, but if my college one had had one, I might have written it at that point. But there was no turning back. Once the pond water hit, it was going to be all science all the time.
Well, I beat both of you guys. So I wanted to do this job since I was 8 years old. I have an uncle who was a laboratory professional, took me into his lab. Shh, don't tell anybody, that would be not allowed today. But I got into his lab when I was 8, got to play with some stuff and caught the bug. And I have never, ever looked back. So you each have a different story, right? About how you chose the profession. Ellen, it was accidental, MT, PT. Brianne, you went, oh, you know, where is this going to be? For me, I had a fantastic role model and mentor and encourager. So we each have an opportunity, and truly from this audience perspective, to share that. Okay, so let's continue talking about advocacy and our profession. Let's talk about public stuff. Now that we know that we've got people doing the testing, how do you see advocacy as having a role in public communication about the value of lab testing? So an example might be just something that just getting some communication out about the value of lab tests. Ellen, I'll tap you first. Do you have any thoughts on publicly advocating for the value of what lab testing can do?
Yeah, actually, just personally, you know, my mother has a MyChart, but she's not very tech savvy. So I get her data. And my husband is very tech savvy and he has his lab data. And I see both of their stuff. And, you know, like a traffic light, red, yellow, and green, they see their reference ranges, but it doesn't really mean much to them. You know, if it goes in the red or the yellow, they're like, hey, Ellen, what does this mean? But I was talking with a pathologist and he wants to really start to promote maybe what they do more, maybe get out without behind the microscope. And so he was telling me that he's thinking of starting some kind of education like brown spots and just calling it like brown spots and having some public maybe education about what your brown spots mean, you know, some generic education to the public. College courses, I've seen them advertise like generic classes, you know, those 101 classes, bugs and drugs. And when they publish that class, it's like filled to the rafters because it's basic science with a catchy title. So I think we might see more of that provider education to go with what that lab data is on their portals. And public may like that. They're already getting savvy going into their handheld device, looking up WebMD and stuff. And there might be a marketplace to have forums within health settings for that public education. Might be good for the profession.
Sure. Awesome. Brianne, how about you? Any thoughts about public promotion of our value?
Sure. I think some of those that Ellen mentioned are fantastic in providing opportunities from someone who would be considered an expert in public opinion. I think so much of it is our public has changed. You know, there used to be just this blind trust and faith in what your doctor was saying, and that was it. That was biblical. That was all there was to it. And now it's not that that trust has eroded. It's just now that our patients want to know a little bit more and are willing to do some internet research or to ask more questions, to want to become more learned. And I think COVID, again, sort of helps the public peek behind the curtain a little bit to say, okay, this isn't quite as scary and all of this. And so I think general overall information, I think, is fantastic. And what I kind of liken it to is my husband and I are replacing all of the ceiling fans. I live in Texas. We have ceiling fans in every room and they get worn out because they run most of the year. And so we're swapping out our ceiling fans in our house. We know how to do that, but we don't know how to wire a house. So I think there's a comfort level that could be made with the public with their own health information. Like Ellen's saying, they have access to it. Wouldn't it be great if they understood just a little bit more about it? And that's where we can come in and share that. They don't have to know everything, but they can just know enough to ask some questions and to know what the red, the yellow, and the green mean and when to take appropriate action. So I think it's just a matter of responsibility a little bit on us to be available to share information and then on the public as well, because I think they're hungry for it.
Yeah. And, you know, they have Colon Awareness Month. And wouldn't it be great, you know, to maybe put that with some pathology slides, you know, if you're stage one versus a stage four, maybe what it looks like. It might be kind of cool. Some people might like to see that.
Those are fantastic, fantastic ideas. So I want to kind of take it to the next level. So Brianne, you mentioned the pandemic and what the pandemic has done to really engage patients about laboratory testing. Couldn't agree more. And I think the other piece that we have then is how the pandemic actually elevated the lab and the lab's position within the organization and brought us up to the executive level. And lab testing was clearly needed to keep the population safe and healthy. And that aspect hasn't faded at all. We've always been that, but now we were just known for it. I recently read an article, I live in the state of Minnesota, a study performed in the state of Minnesota, and what they were estimating was the cost of an additional hospital day that was due to something that would be avoidable. So they were calling it an avoidable discharge delay. That cost was $2,500 per day. Reason patients weren't being discharged, several factors. One was maybe not having a skilled nursing bed to go to, but another primary reason was not having the necessary test results on the chart. So what if your lab could perform a test with turnaround time that actually got a patient out of the hospital a day earlier? You just saved your hospital $2,500. So it's not about the cost of that test. It's that value. It's the extra benefit that's brought. So my encouragement, I guess, is that we as an industry, as we advocate for our profession, we shouldn't overlook the opportunity to elevate our value beyond that test result. Might be helping somebody be discharged more quickly. We might be supporting the new cardiac surgery program because we have a strong blood bank. Whatever that is, internal advocacy can be just as important as that community advocacy and just bringing people in. So then let's take it just one step bigger, right? So looking at national, regional advocacy, we see things like state licensure, certification program, advanced certifications degrees, and stuff. Please comment on that higher level of advocacy. Ellen, we'll start with you.
I just think whenever you're in the game to promote your profession, to make it just the next level, it is a good thing. And I think it's awareness of that. The bench tech really needs to have support to want to be a senior leader. The senior leader needs to see value that the organization wants them to be recognized. To have the support to go to national conferences. You know, sometimes you're so busy doing the test, you don't see the bigger picture. And I think by getting out and even going to national conferences allows you to see, I'm not just stuck here. There's a wider organizational culture, and I can be part of something bigger, so that when you get news notification from your senator or knowing what's going on nationally, and reading is the first step to be aware of what's happening. Do you know what I'm trying to say, Jane? Sometimes don't get so focused on the test. You got to have some peripheral vision to see what's going on. Sometimes you're so busy focused, you don't have a broader vision.
Yeah. If you spend all your time looking down, everything just kind of happens to you. And right. I think anyone in the profession, if you choose to look up, you can actually contribute to something larger. Couldn't agree right. more.
That's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
And for me, my career was transformed when my first national meeting that I went to, I went, oh my gosh, I didn't even know I could do more and be more. So it truly changed my life. Brianne, any thoughts on that regional, national advocacy stuff?
Yeah, well, maybe more just the importance of it. And I continue to learn in my time in working with Mayo and seeing clients across the country and how different each small area, each region of the country is. Yes, there's going to be factors and things and challenges that affect the field and the industry as a whole. And that needs to be advocated on a national level. And we're seeing a lot of that activity now, right, with different topics, but also on a regional level, because my eyes have been opened to just the challenges and the nuances of one region versus another, that they really do need that regional advocacy, because what they're facing may not apply to anybody else in the country, but it's insurmountable for this group that's facing it. Or there's an opportunity in one area of the country that they really do need a special voice for that area. So just kind of don't substitute one for the other. They're both important in their spheres and in their scopes and can work hand in hand very well, but certainly not mutually exclusive. You need both of them.
But don't get caught in the day-to-day. Really know that there's something bigger out there. So I guess really have some peripheral vision to, if you don't hear what's going on, try to become informed, because there's a lot going on.
Oh, there sure is. Well, and if you look at it, and every week you can pick up something that comes from the government, some new aspect, some new regulation, some new thing we have to figure out. And there are some people, honestly, who are wired for that, and they love that stuff. And there are others who go, okay, it's like a vitamin. I have to take it. I may not like it, but I have to do it anyway. And Ellen, you mentioned professional associations, and those are groups that do a fantastic job of trying to use our voices. If there's anybody who has interest in medical payment and policy, don't be afraid to reach out to your elected officials. I had a peer years ago, and this goes back over 20 years ago, but pap testing was very, very poorly reimbursed. And she had an opportunity to talk with her local representative, who said, and she just said, do you know, we're saving lives here, but this testing isn't reimbursed. We're losing money on everyone that we do. We need to be paid better. So that representative talked to another representative, and they ultimately were able to bring and enforce some payment changes in pap testing. And this goes back many, many years. But just by having a quick conversation, caring enough and being passionate enough about what you do, she was able to really shift how payment happened for cytology testing, which is so important in the industry. So pick your poison, pick your acronym today. We've got PAMA, we've got SALSA, we've got all of these different regulations that are changing the way we're paid today. If you've got any interest in talking with politicians and helping them understand how important what we're doing, that's just another advocacy opportunity. Okay, here we are again at the end of our time. How did this happen so quickly? So, rapid fire questions. If you had to use three phrases to describe the laboratory profession to somebody who was considering it as a future career, three phrases for somebody who's considering lab as a future career, What would they be? Brianne, we'll start with you.
Okay, rapid fire. I think the first is misunderstood. We're often seen as difficult and picky and all of this, but in our way, that is how we take care of the patient. We fight for the patient by making sure it's labeled properly. There's enough. It's in the right container, XYZ. So I think that's often misunderstood by the people receiving that message. I'd say the second is vital. And I think, as you mentioned, the pandemic helped highlight that, but we've always been important. We've always been vital. Just ask us, we'll tell you, right? And we're seeing that now more with the staffing shortage that you mentioned, is we have seen clients that in their lab staffing structures are having to choose between, do I cover blood bank or do I cover everything else? And that's a choice that we would never want the lab to be in a position to have to make, but that's where they are. And so I think vital is the rest of the hospital, the rest of the organization understanding you can't do it without us. And then the last is passionate. From a bench tech level to a senior leader level, they care and we care about what we do. It's just we need to be more vocal about it and let more people know about it. And I think that's where our advocacy comes in.
Fantastic. Ellen, how about you? Three words, three phrases, your choice.
All right. Well, you know, I can't do words because, I'm a little wordy. So I thought about these. So lab depends on generations, right? So if I'm talking to young kids, I'm saying the laboratory science is really cool. And I'm really glad to see that we're promoting women in science, STEM courses. I mean, it's awesome. Science is cool. And you know what's exact? They say, without the laboratory, doctors are just guessing. So science is cool. And I would say, just on experience I've seen with leaders across the country, the laboratory is a profession that you decide what to make it. If you think it's a job and you just want to come in, take your breaks, take your lunch, leave at 3:30, it's a job. But I never saw it as that. I love what I do and I've done it for 40 years, but I am not a bench tech anymore. I've grown, I've gone back to school, I've seen phlebotomists, specimen processors, lab aides, go back to school, become techs, go back to school, become a pathologist. And the lab has paid for it. They have tuition reimbursement and they've grown within their profession. So it's what you decide to make it. It's always about the patient. We're behind the scenes. People like to be behind the scenes. But if you don't want to be behind the scenes and you're an extrovert, you can do the outreach stuff. We'd love to have you. And then, I see these YouTube videos and, I just got to say, yeah, of course I'm a scientist. I like to solve medical mysteries. And that's what we do. And we love doing what we're doing. That's what I think, Jane.
Perfect. So for me, dream come true. 8 years old, wanted to do it, still doing it, gratifying. And truly, it is all about the patient. So those are kind of my three thoughts. So with that, we are at the end of our time again. So thank you, both of you, for sharing your thoughts on advocating for the laboratory and for our profession on all of these different levels. We certainly know that what we do matters. And I hope that our audience today has gained some new tips on how to increase awareness and support the laboratory profession from the personal level into the community within an organization, taking a bigger state than nationally. We are truly professionals, and it's our responsibility to advocate for all of the great work that we do. So Brianne, Ellen, thank you so much today. And thank you for listening to Leveraging the Laboratory, a podcast from Mayo Clinic Laboratories. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe. And until next time, we encourage you to continue to promote your community-based hospital laboratory. The needs of the patient come first.